activate the view screen, and turn on your universal translators, because it is time for another Galactic Netcast.
By your command.
And a great disturbance in the Force.
Resistance is futile.
Who built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
Exterminate!
Silent Breed is people!
I'll be back.
That sounds like something out of science fiction.
We live in a spaceship, dear.
Hear ye, hear ye. I'm Dave Nelson, and on this third day of July 2014, I call to order this, the 15th meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. Let's commence with the roll call. Matt Stein, are you here?
Yeah.
What is your favorite Arnold Schwarzenegger movie?
Oh, man, that's a loaded question, and you know it. Man, based on pure awesomeness, Commando.
All right. Fair enough. I think that's a great answer. Brad Ludwig, are you present?
Present and accounted for.
Okay, let's stick with the favorite questions. Favorite comic of all time? Comic book of all time?
Boy, favorite comic book of all time. Gonna have to go with... No, my favorite comic book series of all time is Legion of Superheroes, the 1990s version.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. I have no idea what... Who's in that? Is that DC or Marvel? I don't even know that.
That's DC Comics, and that's the superheroes of the 31st century.
Okay, all right, cool. All right, wrapping up our roll call, Anessa Moyens, are you in the his house?
Word.
Okay. Favorite star?
Favorite star?
Star in the universe.
Technically, it's not one star, but I would have to go with Albireo.
Okay.
Because with the naked eye, it looks like one star, but when you look at it through a telescope, it's actually two stars, and one's yellow and one's blue.
Wow. We learned something, actual knowledge tonight. I'm blown away.
Optical binary located in the constellation of Cygnus plus one.
All right. Good enough. Well, welcome, everybody, to the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. We are geekless, we're guestless this week. We don't have a guest. Our guest fell through. So in its place, I have brought with me a present that my lovely wife, Stephanie, got me tonight. It's a July 4th Independence Day present because she felt like, oh, it's my first year not in the country to celebrate the Independence Day. So she got me a patriotic-themed Lego set of Captain America taking on members of Hydra and, this set contains Red Skull, Captain America, Super America, and a Hydra henchman. So,
are you going to be working on that tomorrow?
Yes, tomorrow it's going to be a project.
The 4th of July?
Yes, on the 4th of July. So there you go. That's our unofficial guest for this episode. I want to mention this more than once, so let's get it out first time here at the very top of the show. Next week's guest is New York Times best-selling author Hugh Howey. We have a New York Times best-selling author, New York Times best-selling list author. Hugh Howey is going to be on our show next week. How awesome is that? Matt is looking him up right now. Matt has no idea.
100% Googling this guy.
Yeah, because I'm going to be honest with you, I'm not familiar with the name.
Okay, well, he's...
I don't keep up with bestseller lists.
Okay, he's the author of a series of books called The Wool Omnibus. They're dystopian fiction books. He's a self-published author, so he got famous through self-publishing. I believe eventually, I could be wrong about this, a publishing house did pick him up, but he first got big by self-publishing. He's a big self-publishing advocate as well.
Did you sell your soul to the devil to get these people on the show?
No. Maybe. Possibly.
Or are you just a sweet talker?
It's hey.
Yeah. You know.
Wink, wink.
You know how I am.
Send you this maple syrup if you come on the show.
Yeah. A lot of bribery. A lot of goods
Canada?
And services exchanging hands. Yeah, sure. If you want to believe that, Matt, fine. Go for it.
It's funny,
let me slide you some loonies and toonies and you can stop on by.
All right. So
it's really awesome. Like, apparently the series is a post-apocalyptic type thriller.
Yep, takes place underground. They're in like missile silos that were made into like habitable places so that people can live. It's very good.
Awesome.
Yeah. So that's next week here on the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. But first, let's get through this week's episode. Let's see. Before we get underway and talk about the week's science fiction news, don't forget to go to patreon.com/galacticnetcasts, patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. And for as little as $1 a month, you can support our work on the internet, support our effort to become the greatest science fiction, science, and geek culture podcasting news network on the planet.
Of all time!
Of all time! Dollar a month.
Podcasting overlords?
Yes, podcasting overlords. I like that a lot. Good one. Good one, Matt. Patreon.com/galacticnetcasts, and we thank you in advance for supporting the network. All right. Before we get into the new news, the new stuff for the week, let's revisit the last episode, which was 2 weeks ago, by the way. Brad, let's read the minutes from the last meeting.
Well, our guest geek last episode was Brian Brushwood. Brian Brushwood is a magician, author, holy crap, he does a lot of stuff kind of a guy. And you know him from Scam School and also his new Nat Geo show, Hack the System. He brought to the table the story of Ridley Scott, the director signing up to do a adaptation of the book The Martian, which will be starring Matt Damon. And I got to say, based on Brian's talking up of the book The Martian, ended up buying a Kindle version of the book.
I have.
Dave?
I have a physical copy. My wife read it like in 2 days, and I've been reading it for like about 9 days.
Yeah, because I had heard about it a few months ago, and people have been talking about it, and then he talked about it, and then Amazon had it on sale. So I'm like, I'm going to buy 2 copies. So, yep.
So Anessa got me a present.
Yay.
So, that was Brian's, and what a delightful and funny guy.
He was very delightful.
And very, very, very sci-fi. He's up on his sci-fi stuff. It was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The next story that was brought to the table was Matt's story of the top 10 weirdest origins of sci-fi sounds we know and love, like the TARDIS and the TIE Fighter, just to name a few things. I brought to the table the Max Landis proposed opening for Ghostbusters 3. Now, there was a lot of speculation on the internet that he was going to get tapped to direct the third Ghostbusters film, and he flat out denied it, but he did post on Twitter, if I did do the movie, here's how I would open it. And it was a very, very fascinating entry. It was a series of two or three tweets, I think. It was just a brilliant way to intro the movie.
And you never revealed what he said, actually.
I did not, but now that it's been a couple of weeks, the intro to the movie would have been our introduction to Ivo Shandor, who he was the architect of the hotel, well, it's kind of an apartment complex that Dana and Louis Tully lived in. And in this movie, which was would have taken place probably, you know, 30, 40 years before the first film, Ivo Shandor is talking to an overweight individual who is a nervous eater and is a part of Ivo Shandor's cult. And he's asked to do something, this overweight gentleman, and he wants out. He doesn't want to be a part of the shenanigans, and Ivo Shandor kills him for his trouble, and this ghost that's created is Slimer. So, and this took place at the Sedgwick Hotel, which is where Slimer is first discovered in the first film. So,
cool.
That was the opening. So it would sort of be a tip of the hat to the origin of the first film, and probably would have led into other things that might have tied other bits of the previous movies together. Dave brought to the table the continuing saga. I'm sorry, it's 4th of July here, and people are blowing crap up, so you're probably going to hear
me. Same here.
random reports in the background. I apologize to everyone for that. Harrison Ford, as we know, had a bit of the Millennium Falcon drop on his leg, and he broke it in a couple of places. The original report was that he broke his ankle. Now it sounds like he actually broke more than his ankle and parts of his leg. And there's lots of speculation that, you know, production's going to be dragged behind. They have to change the story about to kind of deal with Harrison Ford being out for at least 8 weeks with the recovery of his legs.
And J.J. Abrams really, really wants to push back the release date to the next spring. But Disney does not want to.
Disney's having none of it, which yeah. I think is kind of ridiculous. I mean, Harrison Ford's kind of a deal. So, mm-hmm. But that also comes into – it's going to cost money to keep the crews, you know, your crews on board. To film and all the technical stuff. So I remember who was it? Roger Zemeckis talking about that when he did the movie Castaway. There had to be a period of time where Tom Hanks was going to actually lose a bunch of weight to kind of give more of the appearance of him actually being on the island for a period of time. So I think they took off for like 6 months, but in order for Zemeckis to keep his film crew, everybody that he had on Castaway, he filmed a second film to keep everybody together and then came back and finished Castaway. So I think Disney might be looking at the cost of trying to the delays might make keeping crew on the payroll.
Maybe so. they should film one of the other interstitial movies in the meantime.
Yeah, maybe. We'll have to see what happens moving forward. And last but certainly not least, NASA brought to the table a very interesting story of the Frankenstein mythos told through the perspective of Igor, and it would star James McAvoy as Dr. Victor Frankenstein and Daniel Radcliffe as Igor. So very, very interesting tale that would talk about the origins of Igor and give you a whole different perspective on, and it sounded almost humanizing perspective of Victor Frankenstein. So yeah, all very good stories.
And it wouldn't be your grandfather's Igor. It wouldn't be like the small, kind of chubby, balding Igor from like way back when.
Marty Feldman from Young Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Nope, nothing like that.
Yeah. All right.
So that wraps up our old stories.
All right. On to new news, new business, I should say. And let's get into it with Matt's got the first story.
Yeah. Nice and short one, but they released a teaser for the new Star Wars Battlefront game. There wasn't a whole lot of information, but anyone that's played Battlefront kind of knows what it is. For those of you who don't know, it essentially the original games took like battle scenes from Star Wars movies, and you could play them out. So like the big walker guys. This is where me not being into Star Wars will totally show through, and people will smack their faces and be like, "God, this guy is
yeah."
Functionally dumb.
They're called AT-ATs, right?
I was going to say, are those the AT-ATs?
Yep. The AT-ATs, and they fly around, they go pew, and they shoot the thing in their butt. And
pew, pew, pew.
And they fall over. You could do that in a video game. So they're rebooting that game series, and I'm actually pretty excited because it seems like they put like a stupid amount of effort into it. They went into the Star Wars Museum and like took pictures of the actual models that were used in the movies, and then went to the actual film locations and took like pictures of the scenery, and then they had like replicas made of the miniatures that were used in the movies and took pictures of those at the scenery so they could get like the actual scenes for the game.
I saw a behind the scenes thing on this. I don't know where it was, but they showed them like in that Norwegian town where they filmed the ice stuff, and they went to the Redwoods in Northern California for the Forest of Endor. They went all over the place.
That's what this was. Like this actually came out like 20 days ago, I think it said, but I just found it out. So it looks really cool, and for not being into Star Wars, I'll totally pick it up. Probably not the day it comes out, but I'll keep an eye out for what's happening, which is pretty big when it comes to Star Wars stuff for me.
No, this looks like a fantastic game, and it looks like it's. I love how they're going back to all these classic movies, the classic scenes, and all the the original trilogy of movies, and just kind of redoing
them. What are they gonna do? Like, you can recreate Jar Jar Binks making a jackass out of himself for a couple hours.
God, everybody who played that game would want to kill him right away.
So, funny side story real quick. My dad has, they released a Star Wars pinball machine that had, like, a screen on the top, and it would display on the pinball machine, so when you would play, it would register or whatever. And it was for Episode 1, so there was a bunch of Jar Jar Binks sounds in it. So when I would go to my parents and play this thing, Jar Jar Binks would yell whatever. It'd be so horny, or whatever he says.
It's not exactly what he says, Matt, but we get the point.
He said Misa something or other. So.
And Jar Jar Binks is such a hot potato that nobody wants to touch at Disney that they actually lost a director who was interested in bringing Jar Jar. Seriously, he wanted to talk more, do more with Jar Jar Binks and kind of make him not as much of a moron. And Disney went, no, you're done. And
wow.
I mean, it was just a complete non-starter.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, that just tells you how much he's reviled and how much Disney is not going to have Jar Jar Binks in any of their stuff moving forward.
Yeah, there's not a single person that I've ever seen or met that has liked Jar Jar Binks.
Actually, I will say that I like Jar Jar Binks in the Lego Star Wars video games because he can jump really high.
Okay, but... But he's not
silver lining, I guess.
Well, there you go.
That's one redeeming quality that I remember. Was I think it was him and maybe, I don't know if it was Leia. There were a couple of characters that could jump really high, which would help you solve the puzzles and whatnot. So
just the way he walks pisses me off.
Poor Jar Jar.
Yeah, he gets no respect at all.
They doomed him from the start.
Yeah.
I was trying to be optimistic.
Well, you tried, Anessa, and we thank you for that.
Okay.
All right, so Star Wars Battlefront, the 2015 release, just in time for the movie, I'm guessing, or movies.
Yeah, it doesn't say specifically when in 2015, but I'm sure as it gets closer to the end of 2014, more will come out.
Okay.
I mean, they had minimal gameplay footage, so it's cool. Still probably pretty young.
There's another Star Wars video game coming out, isn't there? Or am I thinking of the animated series? I'm thinking, never mind, I'm thinking of the animated series. That's what I'm thinking of.
I don't know if you're entirely wrong. Nope, no, I think you're right.
Okay.
You're always right, Dave.
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate that. You can just keep telling me that every week, and I'll be happy.
Every couple of minutes, I'll just be like, God, Dave, you're so right all the time.
All right, Brad, I was really hoping that you would grab this story, and thank God you did, because this is awesome. Really awesome, awesome.
Yeah, so the story I'm bringing to the table is we've got little tastes of music from the Guardians of the Galaxy teaser trailers that we've seen, and the music is almost a character in and of itself in the film. It's being used definitely to set a tone for the film overall, but it also firmly anchors Star-Lord, Peter Quill, in a particular time period of when he was originally abducted from Earth as a child when he was 10, and that year was 1980. And the music of that, the songs that they picked... really cool. The songs that we've heard in the teaser trailers have been Blue Suede's Hooked on a Feeling. We've heard...
Spirit in the Sky.
Spirit in the Sky by Norman Greenbaum. And we've heard one of the teaser trailers has a bit of Cherry Bomb from The Runaways.
Cherry Bomb.
Yeah. But other songs... And the reason why I'm even bringing this up is they are actually releasing the soundtrack... they've released it on Spotify, and you can listen to the soundtrack before it becomes available for sale July 29th. Now, the film isn't coming out until August 1st, so they're going to release the soundtrack before the film comes out. And the music on here is pretty freaking cool. Just the songs that I've listed are pretty awesome, but there's also Elvin Bishop's Fooled Around and Fell in Love. I think the main thing to think about is I'm from that time period. I have heard those songs. I remember those songs very distinctly, and I think that he's very keenly aware, James Gunn, when I say he, is very keenly aware of who this movie is targeted for and is using that to pull people in. And I'm hearing a hella echo.
I don't know why. I'm not hearing it. Anybody else hearing it?
Okay. I was checking.
I did.
Okay.
It's gone
okay,
now
it's gone. Weird. Okay. Anyway, Jackson 5... Marvin Gaye.
And Brad, also David to mention, you also want to mention too, is if you go in order of the songs, if you look on the list in order that they appear, it kind of tells the story of the movie.
Yeah, it really, really kind of does. I don't want to go. What we really want you to do is go to the show notes, take a look at the link, and this story comes from IO9. So you'll be going to IO9 and take a look at that. And quite honestly, if you read the track names in order from 1 to 12, and there are 12 songs on the soundtrack, yeah, I can see a definite pattern to what would be happening in the film. It looks very logical.
Raspberries Go All the Way. I love that song. That song is kick ass. And there's a good mix of music, too. It's not just one particular genre or style of music.
No.
I mean, you got Redbone. Rupert
Jackson
Holmes.
5.
Yeah. So it runs the gamut. And you know, I think they really made the right decision in using songs like these in the movie, not just a straight-up, you know, science fiction, a straight-up science fiction film or a straight-up, like, comic book superhero film would use, like, big, majestic, you know, orchestrated music and kind of stay away from popular music. But since the character is really focused in on that year that he was abducted, I think it's perfect. Yeah. You said that earlier, and I think that's right on.
And like I said, it's like the soundtrack itself is a character. And the soundtrack that they're releasing July 29th, and you can listen to it on Spotify now, actually. If you click that link, you can listen to those songs. The songs that you're hearing, this soundtrack that they're releasing, is actually the songs that Peter Quill has. It's like a copy of his tape. So it's like you get a piece of the film even to have for yourself, which is really kind of cool in its approach as well.
His tape in his Walkman or whatever that is.
Yeah. Yes. It's a Walkman.
Yeah. It's so cool.
I had a Walkman.
Me too.
So did I.
I had like one of the original Sony Walkmans, and the one weakness that it had, because the way, you know, you plug your headphones into it, every once in a while I had to go in, I had to open it up, and I had to resolder the contacts because the leverage that, you know, I had it in my inside coat pocket. Leverage that the headphone jack had would start to pry it out of the board, so I had to open it up and resolder the contacts so I could continue to use it.
Wow.
Crazy.
I had one of the original Sony Walkmans that looked like a box. It didn't look rounded or sleek. It looked like a frickin' box.
No, they were huge. They were gigantic. I didn't have a Walkman, like a Sony, like cassette Walkman originally. What I started with was basically an AM/FM radio, which was about the size, like, three of my phones. And I've got a pretty big phone. This is, you know, a 5-inch phone, so it's three of them. Well, maybe two of them, two and a half, maybe. And that was a radio. That's all it did, FM radio. I don't think it was even AM. I think it was just FM. I have an app on this phone that's an FM radio.
Yeah, miniaturization over time has served us very well. Yeah, one of the things, and they must have the chip turned down in Canada, not in the U.S. But even our phones have an FM chip in it; they're just not activated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I gotta figure out how to turn that on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good luck. But
shut up, Brad.
No, I'm saying good luck. If you can hack your phone to that point where you can do that, I wish you well.
Actually, this is not a Canadian phone. I got this through a third party. It's not through a carrier. So That may be why I have the FM radio app on it.
Gotcha.
All right, cool. Looking forward to the movie, The Guardians of the Galaxy, and the soundtrack as well. All right.
Absolutely.
I was so happy when I ran into this story, and this is going to cause a lot of controversy. The greatest moments in sci-fi, fantasy, and horror. Are you guys familiar with SFX magazine?
Yes.
Yes.
Vanessa?
Well, I've heard of it. I've never actually looked at their magazine, though.
Okay. Well, they're out of Britain, they recently celebrated their 250th issue, and they did it by creating a definitive list of the 250 greatest moments in sci-fi, fantasy, and horror. About 100,000 readers took part in the poll, and you'll be really surprised by the number one greatest moment in sci-fi, fantasy, and horror. So let's just run down the list real quick, and speak up if you are surprised by any of these. So number 10, you have to buy the magazine to get the whole list, but they released the top 10 online. So here's the top 10. Back to the Future, where we're going, we don't need roads. You guys all agree that's a pretty cool moment?
Yes.
It is.
Okay. I'm not familiar with the Harry Potter movies, but number 9 was Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, Dumbledore's death. Was that a pretty big deal?
Well, yeah, I guess.
I wouldn't put it as number 9, though.
No, but funny side story. So I'm surprised you guys haven't given me crap about the U.S. losing in the World Cup already, so I'll just bring it up already. But
no, why would we give you crap about the U.S. losing? That's our country.
You guys like to make me sad.
That would mean I would have to care about soccer.
Shut up, Brad.
Anyways, yeah, me too.
In the last game, the U.S. Goalkeeper set the record for World Cup saves ever. So there's a hashtag going around that says it's like Tim Howard could – the things Tim Howard could save. His name's Tim Howard. There's a joke saying, like, oh, Tim Howard could save my marriage because he saved so many shots. And there's, like, people photoshopping him in to, like, popular meme pictures, like the dog getting blasted in the face with the frisbee. And they, like, photoshopped Tim Howard in there stopping the frisbee from hitting the dog. But they did it with the picture of Dumbledore falling, and it's, like, Tim Howard catching him. That's my story.
That's awesome. Yeah, I got something to add to that. Did you hear that somebody trolled Wikipedia and actually made him – one of his credits was Secretary of Defense. Defense.
Yep.
U.S. Secretary of Defense. That's so sweet.
That's awesome.
I know. Yeah. All right, so number 8, Matt, I know that you're a fan of the Matrix films, right?
Yeah.
Number 8, The Matrix, Neo dodges bullets in the bullet time scene. I think everybody is familiar – even if you're not familiar with the actual movies, you're familiar with that scene because it is iconic.
Well, it was like the first time they ever used this slow motion, bending back and stuff, and that's when they spun the camera around the room and they did like the. Yeah. They did a lot of really innovative stuff in that movie. Now, maybe it wasn't the first time it was ever done, but it was the first time it was done on a huge scale.
Yeah, I think a lot of that stuff that a lot of the camera angles and different shots that the Matrix used, I think they used a lot of that stuff in like Chinese martial arts films previously.
Yes. Yes.
But yeah, because they had, like, a whole bunch of cameras set up all around the person, and they just had them all going.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the way that it got edited together just gave it that really cool effect. Like, a moment in time is essentially what they were capturing.
Yeah, and it's still iconic to this day. I mean, it still stands out as something very unique, that scene in particular.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah,
so.
Yeah, and it's inspired a lot of visual senses to techniques and whatnot.
And wasn't there a parody film that they did that scene to?
Should be up there.
All right. So number 7, Game of Thrones, The Red Wedding, The Lannisters Send Their Regards. I am not a Game of Thrones watcher, but I know about this scene. It's like world famous, even if you don't watch the show.
I know about it.
What's that, Anessa?
I've watched the scene, and holy crap.
I've never seen it.
I don't watch or read Game of Thrones, but...
I don't either.
I have recently downloaded them all to start watching them, but I would need time, because from what I understand, it's as bad as heroin, and people just...
That's what I've been told, and friends of mine have been, like, binge-watching to get caught up, and I'm like, no.
Yeah, I told a friend of mine I downloaded it, and he goes, oh, so you're just going to go ahead and get rid of your entire weekend? I'm like, I don't know, maybe.
Might as well.
Well, yeah, I don't think my wife has anything planned for me after, you know, we celebrate America tomorrow.
Sweet. Well, get on it. We'll expect a report next week.
Oh, crap.
The pressure's on now.
All right.
All right, so number six, Blade Runner, Roy Batty's Tears in Rain speech. I don't remember that. Brad?
Yeah, that's at the very end where
it's at the end.
Deckard is the big battle with Roy at the end of the film, and they end up on the roof of one of the buildings, and Roy gives his speech, and there's this beautiful dove release scene, and it's just, it's excessive, but it's it is pretty interesting. Hmm. It's a very visually stunning moment, and kind of a good way to cap that whole thing off.
Do you think it deserves to be number six?
No.
Okay.
Well, not right. Just like would, that, like what's that. Going on in the scene. It's just the actual speech itself, and I mean, you know, he's talking about how all those moments will be lost in the rain, like, or, well, it'll all those moments will be lost in time like tears in the rain, and yeah. That's just a really deep thought for that particular scene, I think.
That's enough.
And yeah, I can see how they would want it to be higher in the list, like actual, like what goes on in the scene and right before it. Maybe not necessarily, but the actual monologue that Roy gives.
Yeah, it humanizes Roy. You know, throughout the whole film, it's like they're duplicates, they're not real, and that speech that he gives, I would agree. Upon
it's
further
the speech.
Thought.
Upon
it,
further
it
review.
Does stuff there.
Upon further review, my girlfriend is right.
So basically, Inessa was the referee with the hood over her head looking at the replay.
Upon further review. Inessa is correct.
First down.
All right.
First down.
All right. So, number five, Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back. Luke learns that Darth Vader is his father. Do you think it should be higher than that? I believe it should be higher than that.
Looking at the rest of the list, no.
Yeah, I think it's at a good spot on the list.
Okay. Is there any moments?
Matt's like, meh.
Is there any moments that's not on this list that you think should be higher than this on this list?
Yes. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, when they're standing and talking to themselves in the Circle K parking lot, and they say, "Strange things are afoot at the Circle K." Actually, probably not that specific part of the movie. Maybe when they first go back in time and they dial the phone and it goes through the circuit. I don't know. That was a big part of my childhood. All those movies were.
Okay.
So I would put that on here before something, say, Fire. I don't want to ruin it.
Yeah, we're not
the next
to that
one,
point yet.
Or number two. But that's it's up. It's all personal preference.
Yeah.
A lot more people are going to agree with the list of 10 than my love of Bill and Ted's.
Yeah, it's all subjective. It's all subjective. It's all personal opinions. So, Brad, did you have one that you wanted to mention that's not on the list?
No, not really. I think the rest of the list is solid. Number four, that scene is freaking awesome.
Okay. Number four, Firefly, Mal Reynolds kicks a bad guy into Serenity's engine intake. That's in the episode The Train Job.
That scene alone, and I don't know if Matt's seen Firefly.
Dave made me watch some, but even having watched some, I don't care. Like, it wasn't a bad show, but I didn't, you know, I don't get a weird nerd pants tent like everyone else does over the show. So, I don't get it. You know what I mean?
Mal,
all subjectives.
The whole thing is Mal is a good guy, right? Mm. A good guy for hire, but there comes a point where he needs to make a point, and he tries to negotiate with the top person, and he says no, and he kicks him, and he gets sucked into the engine of the ship, and everybody goes, holy, we're in for some trouble here. And the next guy, like, immediately, like, gives him the information that he needs because he doesn't want to get sucked through the engine. Because everybody watches this happen. Everybody sees this guy get sucked through and pureed out the other end. And done. And it just, it's on. And everybody's like, okay, if I don't say yes, I'm getting sucked through the engine too. So
it wasn't wasn't that the first episode that actually aired, The Train Job? I know it's supposed to be like number two, right?
Yeah, it's all messed up. It should have been like episode 3, I think, or 4.
Yeah.
But it was aired first because Fox sucks.
Really? Okay. All right. Okay. Number 3, Alien, the chestburster scene. We're all familiar with that one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Pretty much dead on. That's where it should be. In the annals of science fiction, fantasy, and horror movies, or moments. That covers two, actually. That covers sci-fi and horror, pretty much.
Yeah.
All right, we're getting down there. Number two, it's starting to get controversial now. Number two, The Avengers, and this is the scene where the Hulk is fighting Loki, and he says, and he kind of uses him as a... What would a good analogy?
He's flinging him around like a rag doll.
There you go. And he says
on the pavement. And yeah.
And he says
that scene was hilarious.
He says puny god, and isn't that the first time he actually talks? The Hulk talks in that movie.
Yeah, and says words. Yeah.
Yeah, he says puny god. That's from the Avengers. Yeah. All right. Are you guys ready for number one?
Oh yes.
And this is super controversial. The number one greatest moment in sci-fi, fantasy, and horror is from Doctor Who. The Doctor and Rose say farewell at Bad Wolf Bay in the episode Doomsday. Do you guys agree that this should be number one?
If you didn't tear up, you don't have a goddamn soul, is what I'm saying there.
Well, I didn't see it because I don't care about Doctor Who.
And I don't care about soccer, so we're even.
I asked you to care about soccer. I don't subject me to soccer on a weekly basis like you guys subject me to Doctor Who every freaking week.
It's been a while since we've talked about Doctor Who on this show, because all we've talked about is Star Trek and Star Wars. So,
believe me, we'll be talking a lot about Doctor Who in the coming months. Doctor Who will have its Doctor Who will have its day here very, very soon.
I
you guys
know if that should be number one.
Yeah, I was going to ask, being the big Doctor Who fans that both of you are, do you agree that it's number one or should be number one or?
The scene is a tearjerker, but I don't think it's one that should be at number one. I mean, if we're doing a Doctor Who scene that causes tears, it would probably be Rose having to witness her father getting killed, to me. It would be more of an impact.
And it's not really a sci-fi moment, you know? It's like,
it's more of
a lovey-dovey emotional kind
of
moment.
Dad and her interaction is kind of a sci-fi moment because you've got this loop that they're stuck in.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a fantasy, I think, at that point.
Yeah. Brad.
But actually, you know, the episode, I think it was Human Nature, where the doctor has kind of put his consciousness into the watch, and so he could pass for human as he's trying to hunt down this family that's come to Earth, and he has to essentially open the watch and become the doctor, even though he's like... engaged to a woman and in love and free of all the BS that comes with.
Oh, that's the one where he and...
it's the Martha era.
Yeah, Martha. They don't know that they're themselves. They think they're somebody else.
Well, he thinks he's somebody else. Martha kind of goes along for the ride because she was instructed to.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the follow-up episode, in which you find out the links at which the doctor will... The family of blood wanted to become immortal, and they wanted to steal the TARDIS to do it. And he gives them their wish of being immortal, and he does it in horrible, horrible ways that makes you go, damn, you really don't want to make the doctor mad. Kind of like the whole genie thing, be careful of what you wish for, because he gave it to each and every one of them. And it's horrifying when you really get down to it, what he did.
Yeah, the doctor is funny, charming, lovable, but... when he's mad, he gets down to business.
When you cross the bridge too far, it's on.
Now, one of the reasons that this may be number one is that SFX magazine is UK-based.
British.
Yeah. And the British love their Doctor Who. So that might be one of the reasons why that scene in particular is the number one scene in all of sci-fi, horror, and fantasy.
Going back to the question that you had earlier about, when we were talking about Dumbledore.
Yes.
And what scene should be placed higher on the list? Having thought about it a bit, I kind of think that Soylent Green and the realization that Soylent Green is people should be higher on the list.
That's a great moment, and that's a moment that gets made fun of, and that shows how iconic that scene is, you know.
It is, and I kind of think it should be higher up on the list than it is.
Okay.
If anything, it should be where Dumbledore is, and I'm probably going to hear a lot of people that are huge fans of Harry Potter going, "No, Dumbledore should have been higher."
Yeah. Well.
Dumbledore made Green is cool. Top 10 of 250. I mean, choose your battles, Harry Potter people.
Yeah. I'm curious to see the rest. I'm curious to see the rest of the list, and I may pick up the SFX magazine just to see. I'm curious.
Yeah, if I happen to see it on a shelf somewhere, I might pick it up just to read and judge.
All right, let's move on to our final story, and I guess we can talk about this, Anessa. I suppose.
I blame Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
Blame away. Watching this actually blame made away. Me want to see the first one, so.
Yeah, well, because, Brad and I watched the trailer right before the show, and, people don't know what we're talking about. But anyway, the trailer is out, a little sneak preview, I guess, is out for Sharknado 2, the second one. And in the scene that is in the trailer, you've got Ian Ziering, Finn, I guess, in the movie, that was his character's name, is Finn. And he's arguing with Mark McGrath's character.
Oh,
I don't know
yeah.
what the character's name is.
Every and... morning when I wake up.
All around the world. Anyway, statues crumble for me.
Moving on.
But anyway, there's drama outside this New York subway, because it takes place in New York. And everybody gets on the subway, and Mark and Ian are arguing about whatever, somebody getting married to somebody, sister. And then you've got this water coming through the subway tunnels, and you've got these people panicking from one subway car to the next subway car, and then suddenly half the subway car is missing, and you've got a shark flying through the car, and Ian, or Finn, is battling this shark with a baseball bat, and the graphics are just as amazing as the first one.
Yeah, the CGI is nothing too short of a garbage can.
Can somebody explain it's a tornado and a shark, right?
Yes, so there's water spouts, which are tornadoes over the ocean, or over water, and apparently, in the first movie, there's a bunch of sharks that are, trying to migrate or whatever. I forget what they explain they're doing. But there's a high concentration of sharks, and there's a storm moving in. And the storm forms these spouts over the water and picks up these sharks. And then these tornadoes don't lose any power and just keep on trucking once they hit land. And so you've got, these tornadoes filled with sharks flying at people, flying through windows, growling and biting limbs. And so it's the same concept, apparently. You've got large body of water because, New York is along the coast. And apparently it picked up some more sharks and sent it inland. I would guess maybe there's a hurricane that's moving through. I don't know what logic they're using for this, if any.
Really? I don't think there's any logic at all in any of these films.
They try to make it seem like, oh man, there's drama. Finn doesn't approve of this guy played by Mark McGrath about him marrying his sister. There's drama. And there's action. So
I thought I was safe from Sharknado Week being in Canada, but no, I'm not.
Nope. You're never safe from Sharknado,
no.
Dave.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think Sharknado is pretty popular around the world. Yeah,
the Space Channel is doing it too, so it's not just sci-fi.
It was a big hit.
All right, whatever. I don't see it.
I just wanted to, you know, talk about the trailer, let people know that the trailer is out if they want to check it out.
Okay.
Movie comes out later this month, I do believe.
Those who care already know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So July 30th. Excitement.
I'm just glad that we're not talking about this next week when we have a New York Times bestselling author, Hugh Howey, on the show.
No, we won't be talking about Sharknado unless something major happens. But
do I need to act like an adult when he's here?
Yes.
I start now.
Shave that beard.
I've been thinking about it. I might cut her down to a mustache tomorrow. You know, celebrate America in style.
from the tweets and the Facebook messages and everything that I read that Hugh Howey has written, he seems like a real nice, cool, you know, whatever guy. He's not up. He's not
laid back.
Yeah, he's very laid back. Yeah, so I think.
Cool.
I think we can all act like we normally act, even with a New York Times bestselling author on the show next week.
Well, so far we've had an Emmy-nominated guy, and now a New York Times bestseller. We have someone with a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta go buy a lottery ticket after one of these shows.
Sure.
I don't know why this keeps happening.
What we need to do is get an actor, and I've been working on trying to get Richard Hatch from Battlestar Galactica on the show, but it hasn't happened yet. But cross your fingers that may. It may come to fruition sooner or later. Because that pretty much covers...
I guess I should watch Battlestar Galactica then.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because he's in the original and the new series.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
It's on my very long list of things to watch.
The very end of that very long list, I'm guessing.
No, it's not. It's towards
Second.
The top of my Netflix
and,
view.
Yeah, we recommend it.
Yeah, all of us.
I want to actually watch it. Like, right now, I'm... quote-unquote watching that 70s show, but, like, I put it on and then I go to sleep. And I don't want to do that with Battlestar Galactica. I want to actually watch it, so.
Yeah, I think
that's why I haven't started it.
Did we watch any episodes of that for the Sci-Fi Film School?
No, I don't believe so, unless it was before me.
Okay.
I don't think
so. You
know,
you made Matt watch Doctor Who.
Yeah, we watched Doctor Who, Firefly.
Yep.
And a bunch of really bad movies.
Yeah. Those are the best ones to talk about, the really bad movies. You know, we should do a special Sci-Fi Film School, Sci-Fi Geeks Club special where we basically do the format of the Sci-Fi Film School. That'd be fun.
Yeah, I'd like to bring the Sci-Fi Film School back a bit.
Yeah. All right,
maybe
so...
maybe do like a once-a-month thing.
Yeah, I think that's a possibility in the future, so... I believe that Brad has to go to do another podcast, so let's wrap up the show. We're done talking about the news, so all we have to do now is talk about announcements. Before we wrap up, let's review the What We're Watching Weekly, Galactic Netcast, Summer Movie Draft. Does anybody have the document open that we can quickly review this?
You know it's open very slowly.
That's what she said.
Who had Transformers? Who had Transformers?
We are still in first place, though.
Really?
Yeah.
Who had Transformers?
Who had what?
Who had Transformers?
I think it was What We're Watching Weekly.
What We're Watching Weekly did.
They must be in second place because that movie made the most money of all the movies released this summer.
But it didn't.
Yeah, they caught up to you almost.
Wow.
Yeah, we don't have as at one point we almost had like a $200 million lead, and now it's less than $100 million.
What do we have left, Matt? You and I.
If I could open the frickin' doc, this would be way easier. But I know
I counted Planet of the Apes, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
I know we have The Purge.
The Purge, Planes, Fire and Rescue, Hercules, and Get On Up.
Yeah, and we have the most movies left.
Yep.
What do you guys, what have you, you and Anessa, Brad and Anessa, what do they have?
We just have Guardians of the Galaxy and TMNT, and that's it.
So we have no movies this month.
Wow.
Not until August.
But there's only like two or three movies for the rest of the month. There's only eight total movies left for the rest of the summer.
Yeah, it's starting to slow down a little bit.
So we've got nine movies left to be released on our list.
Okay. All right, we'll see. It's anybody's game yet. It's anybody's game.
Well,
Although Matt and I are going to win.
No, absolutely. I don't even know why you're trying to be nice about it.
Well, I'm going to start rooting for Team What We're Watching Weekly.
Yeah.
Oh, so, fine. Be that way, traitor.
So we all know that Team Hondo can't do anything.
Yeah.
Hey, but we're not that far behind, though. Thank you very much.
No, you guys are not anymore.
We've caught up a bit.
You have a firm foundation for the entire movie draft.
A firm foundation to lose with.
Oh, yeah, but there's, you know, someone's got to be on the bottom.
Yeah.
That's what she said.
All right, on that note, let's wrap things up by reminding you guys to subscribe to this show, this Galactic Netcast, on iTunes and Stitcher. And if you're on iTunes, throw us some 5 stars and a good review. We'd appreciate that. We're on Stitcher as well. Follow us on Facebook, Google+, and the Twitter. And real quick, galacticnetcasts.com. Go there, and you can watch a variety of past episodes. It's on the Watch tab, and then you click on Archives. You go to that page, and a random show will pop up. It could be the latest Sci-Fi Geeks Club. Could be episode 1. You never know. Could be a Sci-Fi Film School podcast episode. It's just a random collection of our episodes that you can watch on our website, galacticnetcasts.com. So that's going to do it. I know that we don't normally do this on the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, but final thoughts? Just, you don't have to answer. Just you guys excited for anything coming up? Like next week's episode where we have the New York Times bestselling author Hugh Howey on?
Yes, actually, I'm looking forward to kind of digging through and seeing a little bit more of his stuff. I feel bad that I didn't get a chance to read any of the Flotilla stuff that Daniel Haight, who's kind of writing in that same genre of post-apocalyptic.
Yeah. Should be a good show next week.
Smithing. Yes.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to finishing my homemade bacon. I got that going for me.
Ed, Anessa, and I this weekend are working on the podcasting furniture, essentially, the tables for our studio. So
we are going to be grilling tomorrow and doing some woodwork.
So I guess happy birthday, America.
Yeah. Celebrate your country's freedom by blowing a piece of it up.
All right. On that note, let's get out of here. I call this edition of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club adjourned. Hang on. Where's my gavel? I call this meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club adjourned. Goodbye, everybody.
Adios.
Okay, bye.
Bye, Dad.
There you go. Bye, guys. Leave your hailing frequencies open and scanners on full, because another Galactic Netcast will be approaching your coordinates soon. For more information, go to galacticnetcasts.com.